Before we move on to some Q&A and some comments, I now have the privilege of introducing one of my political mentors and one of my personal best friends, Senator Douglas Roach. He had a distinguished career as a parliamentarian, as a diplomat, and as a visionary, and he is the visionary leader who put forward the idea, put the flag in the ground, that created the Middle Powers Initiative. And I just want to point out that one of the things that the Middle Powers Initiative spawned is the Parliamentary Network for Nuclear Nonproliferation and Disarmament, which now, President Carter, I'm proud to say, has over 750 parliamentarians in over 75 countries, and that's because of the extraordinary work of our colleague Alan Ware, who this year won the Right Livelihood Award, the alternate Nobel Prize. And so it is the spawning of that kind of initiative that has come from the Middle Powers Initiative and that is pushing ultimately for a nuclear weapons convention to universally ban them. And I want to respond as the president of the Global Security Institute with respect to your comment about working together. We will do anything that you might suggest to help facilitate that at any time, because we are in complete agreement that there is absolutely no reason why all of the groups working for a safer, saner world shouldn't be working together. Absolutely. We're 100% in agreement. Senator Roach, we look forward to your remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, excellencies, and colleagues, 10 years ago, this month, I had the privilege of speaking to the first Middle Powers Initiative Atlanta consultation in the presence of President Jimmy Carter. Mr. President, here we are again. We're not getting older, sir. We're getting better. And it is my honor to thank you sincerely for your hospitality and for your address. Mr. President, hearing from your lips the terrible position that leaders of nuclear weapon states are put in is sobering indeed. You have called for a follow-up to the initiatives launched by President Obama, and I can assure you, sir, that it is our purpose here to contribute to the follow-up needed. And if I may quote your words, I thought very challenging words to us in carrying out this work, to be aggressive, persistent, and demanding in our approach to the nuclear weapon states. Mr. President, those are pretty good words. We're going to use them as a motto. 10 years ago, I said in this room, and I repeat today, I speak as a Canadian, which almost by definition means a friend of the United States. Moreover, I had the good fortune to live in this country for 10 years. Three of my children were born here. So I know from firsthand experience the greatness of the United States. The human energy and creativity so abundant here have animated me. Now that greatness is called upon once again as we consider the role of the United States in fulfilling its responsibilities to work with the international community in resolving the overarching issue of our time, the elimination of nuclear weapons. Now, a lot has happened in these 10 years. We went from the high point of the unequivocal undertaking to total elimination of nuclear weapons made by all states parties to the NPT in 2000 to the breakdown of the review conference in 2005. Today, new hope has emerged as a result of President Obama's, I quote, commitment to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons. and his convening of the unprecedented summit of the UN Security Council and the unanimous adoption of Resolution 1887. With both the U.S. and Russian leadership seriously committed to nuclear disarmament negotiations, a new opportunity exists to make substantive reductions in existing nuclear arsenals, halt proliferation, and set the world on an irreversible path to zero nuclear weapons. For the first time, key states are actually collaborating on how to implement the vision of a nuclear weapons-free world. Work toward elimination of nuclear weapons can no longer be called idealistic. It's the stuff of practical politics. This is a historic shift in policymaking. The climate is indeed bright in which to solidify progress at the 2010 NPT Review Conference. But the world risks falling into a trap. And it is that trap that I wish now to address. The argument now being advanced in the United States by opponents of nuclear disarmament that the U.S. must maintain nuclear weapons to protect the credibility of its nuclear umbrella so that allied nations do not have to obtain their own nuclear weapons is particularly insidious and will undermine President Obama's efforts to work for a nuclear weapons-free world. It is particularly important that U.S. allies convey the idea that extended deterrence cannot masquerade as justification for the continuing expansive role of nuclear weapons. Canada, my own country, belongs to a military alliance, NATO, still operating under the Cold War mentality that nuclear weapons are essential. Thus, in Canada, we live under the U.S. nuclear umbrella extended to all NATO members. I do not want to live under such an umbrella any longer. And I know in this that I'm speaking for many, many Canadians, and probably for a lot of citizens in NATO countries. Alliances do not have to depend on nuclear weapons for deterring aggression. Non-nuclear military power is already far more than needed. Similarly, the argument that the U.S. Senate must not ratify the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty absent the guarantee that U.S. laboratories can ensure the modernization of nuclear weapons through lab work will nullify the gains of ratifying the CTBT. Those who claim that nuclear weapons are still necessary do not usually oppose eventual nuclear disarmament. But they are so insistent on the modernization of nuclear weapons for security purposes today that they drive forward the nuclear arms race. We can see the trap ready to ensnare us. The elimination of nuclear weapons supposedly must always remain an eventual goal, meaning that the goal is so far over the horizon as to be meaningless. In retaining eventual, nuclear defenders will so solidify the justification for nuclear weapons that proliferation is bound to occur. And the more proliferation in the years and decades ahead, the harder it will be to even claim that nuclear disarmament has legitimacy. The nuclear weapons cycle, 65 years old, must be broken now before a new and exceedingly dangerous spurt of nuclear proliferation takes place. The idea that it would be satisfactory just to have fewer nuclear weapons must be discarded. It was not sufficient just to have a little slavery or to improve somewhat the condition of life for the slaves. Apartheid for only a few blacks was not acceptable. Colonial domination by outside rulers, as long as they were friendly, could not be tolerated. Slavery, apartheid, and colonialism were social evils that had to be completely eliminated. So, too, nuclear weapons are a social evil. In fact, the ultimate evil. The doctrinists throw up all sorts of false arguments. Nuclear weapons cannot be disinvented. We cannot stop cheaters. Nuclear disarmament will pave the way to conventional wars. All these arguments have been rejected by numerous commissions. No one is talking about unilateral nuclear disarmament, nor can mutual disarmament be done overnight. What is required is an irreversible commitment by all states to achieve a world free from nuclear weapons. Were the nuclear states, the nuclear weapon states, to make such a commitment, they would not only save the Non-Proliferation Treaty from further erosion, but gain the moral authority to call on the rest of the world to curb the proliferation of these inhumane weapons. So how should such a commitment be evidenced? The answer lies in starting specific work now on a nuclear weapons convention. As we know, this would be a global treaty banning the production as well as deployment of nuclear weapons. A global treaty exists banning chemical weapons. A similar treaty prohibits biological weapons. Why should there not now be a global ban on nuclear weapons? So, a model nuclear weapons convention, written by leaders in the nuclear disarmament movement, has been circulating as a UN document for several years. The support of UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon for comprehensive work towards the Nuclear Weapons Convention, the votes in the first committee, and the call by mayors for peace and the Parliamentary Network for Nuclear Non-Proliferation Disarmament are well known to this audience. I believe it is now time to put the Nuclear Weapons Convention into mainstream thinking and discussion. The convention must move from elite discussion to public debate. And I think it would get strong public support. It's clearly something people can understand. So I must emphatically disagree with those who say that it is premature to start work on a nuclear weapons convention. The International Commission on Nuclear Non-Proliferation and Disarmament's 2009 report, I'm honored to sit beside the co-chairman of it, stated in his report, it is not too early to start now on further refining and developing the concepts in the model nuclear weapons convention. The key to a nuclear weapons-free world is to start the preparations now, while political conditions are right, to identify the requisite legal, political, and technical elements while simultaneously undertaking parallel steps on limited measures, such as taking nuclear weapons off alert status, the entry into force of the CTBT, negotiation of an FMCT, and other measures such as verified reductions on current nuclear stockpiles. Active movement towards a convention will act as a roadmap to guide and accelerate the current disarmament process. So I say respectfully to the United States that that extremely important country should send a powerful signal to the NPT Review Conference that it is willing to join such efforts. The U.S. should take this positive action for two sets of reasons. First, it is in its own direct security interest to head off the breakdown of the non-proliferation regime. And second, it is the right thing to do in the interests of humanity. A U.S. president once said, "Let us not negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate." The world will benefit from the start of comprehensive nuclear weapons negotiations. The world, it seems, has stopped loving the bomb. That much progress has been made. Now we must summon up the will to finally end the long love affair. Thank you.